Blog Talk Radio.
good evening, everyone out there in Radio Land. Glad to have you here tonight with us on All About Service Dogs. And tonight we have a really good guest, as always. We have Alice Richter tonight. Alice, say hello to everybody and greet the people.
Hi, everybody out there in Service Dog Land, Radio Land. Nice to meet you, and I'm very glad that you have invited me to share my story.
Great. Now, tonight, we get to hear from Alice, and she's going to take us from her beginnings until here. Very good story, very interesting story. And I've encouraged her for a while to come on and tell the story, and she's finally agreed to do it. So, Allison, please, I'm sorry, Alice, please go ahead and introduce yourself and let us know how you got connected with service dogs themselves in the beginning.
Okay. I've been a groomer for 20 years, so I've been in the pet industry for quite some time. And in 2005, I had a very severe car accident. I was actually dialing a cell phone while I was driving, and I drove off a cliff. So I'm a big advocate about not even dialing your cell phone when you're driving. I'm living proof. All right. So I had this car accident. I was told I would never walk. I would never use my left side. I broke my back in 7 places. I broke everything from my neck to my hip. I broke every rib. There were many miracles involved in my car accident that you should not have lived through, but my higher power, whoever you want to refer to as your God, my God said I had a job here to do, and this was the only way for me to do this job. So while I was in my hospital bed, they had moved me into my home, and I had 2 German Shepherds, while my female had a litter. My mentor said, Alice, send one of those dogs to school and have it trained, one of my puppies. Have it trained as a service dog for you. Because at the time, you know, I was looking at being in a wheelchair. So we picked the largest female, and we sent her to school at 6 months old. And she was trained as a mobility assist dog for me. In the next few years, I got better through my physical rehab, and I was determined to not be wheelchair bound. So as I got better and better, I decided, you know, this was such a gift to have a service dog. She totally changed my life, you know, because like I would drop something with my nerve damage, I would drop something and someone would hand it to me. I'd drop it again. And people get a little frustrated having to pick the same thing up and hand it to you multiple times. But a dog loves to do that. They live to do this for you. So I wanted to share this wonderful gift that I had been given, a service dog. So in 2010, I said, okay, God, I need this amount of money to go to school. Well, 3 days later, my home burned to the ground, from the ceiling to the support beams. So here I was with the money to go to school, which I had to live on property for a year. And I did this. I went to school. I graduated. From there, I continued on to 2 other programs that continued my training. One was to teach me the legal ins and outs of being a service dog trainer. And I basically learned to do mobility dogs because that is what I had. So as I started training service dogs, the first dog I trained was for a quadriparaplegic who still works with her to this day. They've actually gotten a second dog from me, but anyways. Other people started coming to me, like diabetic. I've done a diabetic dog, but I had a diabetic boyfriend that I was able to train the dog off of. Part of what they taught me in school was tracking. So I found a lot of families have autistic children, and they started coming to me. So I took this knowledge and I applied it for the autistic children. Number one, they have to track the child if the child gets lost. They can alert the parent to if they're going to have a lot of, you know, seizures. I've placed 8 seizure alert dogs, and they are all alert dogs, not just assists, but alerts. And so my heart has gone into that direction for working with veterans. I've had a lot of veterans come to me. I've gotten in with our local veteran hospital, and the counselors actually refer veterans to me because they've seen the quality of the dog's training that I do. I train a dog like I want my dog trained. So I really focus now on autistic children and veterans. Veterans have everything from mobility, PTSD, sight assist, and I can help them with all these things. And I've seen it over and over, placing these dogs in lives, and it changes not only their life, but the family dynamics also. I oversee a grooming shop. I'm able to train on my own time. With my disability, it's easy for me to work when I can, go lay on an ice pack, get back up and work with the dog, even work with it in my bed as a puppy because I start imprinting at 6 weeks old. So this is how I became what led me into being a service dog trainer. I understand how you want a service dog to be. You know, you don't want to have to repeat yourself 4 or 5 times, 6 times to ask the dog to pick you up your keys. You want to ask the dog, bring me my keys, and the dog brings you your keys. You drop the remote off the bed, bring me the remote. You want the dog to bring the remote, not 15 other items. Which does happen in the beginning, but, you know, you and your dog learn each other. So I feel like I've been a big success at this. I mean, I have a long ways to go, but this is where my heart lies, and it's because I'm a service dog owner.
Okay, that's full. That's real full. Okay, so you were a groomer, and you still are a groomer, and you say you should still run and operate your pet grooming business, grooming business.
Right. There's groomers at work, and I just kind of oversee them. It's okay. An art. I can't lose that. You know, it's an addiction. I love it. So I still try to get my nose in it when I can. So, yes, sir.
All right. We're going to circle back to grooming because grooming is important in the service dog community.
That's right.
We've had a couple groomers on last week, as a matter of fact. So we've been touching on these things, and I might want to come back in and get your take on a few things as far as grooming is concerned. But your entrance into the service dog world came from your need for a service dog. And then after seeing your need filled a need that you didn't know you had, but somebody told you and recommended to you and referred you. And then once you got the dog, you were so moved and so blessed, you said, I want to give this to somebody else.
Absolutely.
And that is the heart of what a service dog trainer, service dog program, if you will, an organization needs to have, is the driving force is, you know, I know this can help. It's helped me, and I want to make it available to others. Now, in that, you weren't a dog trainer before service dogs, were you?
No. You know, so, in the grooming industry, you do a lot of work with the dog. That now, as an educated trainer, I can see where I was doing things already that I didn't realize were part of training.
Right. Some of us as trainers, we say, you're always training the dog. You're either training them well or you're training them poorly, but you're always training. So
right.
Now you've applied yourself to learn. And you've given yourself over to it. And now you're able to share with other people. And in that, you decided, okay, I am going to organize and formally do this. Once you went to school, then you developed a business. Did you develop a business first, or did you develop a nonprofit first?
At first, it was for-profit. I started out basically doing basic obedience. You know, I did AKC novice competition, you know, from the school. That was part of what we learned. So that leads over into my training. I train a lot of perfection into the dogs. I mean, it helped greatly. I don't know if I'm getting off subject.
No, you're there. I'll put the rails up. I'll keep you down the middle.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So tell us the name, your business name, and tell us a little bit about the work that you do in your business with training.
Okay. If you're looking for us, we're listed as Alice and Wonder Grooms, LLC, and A Wonder Dog Training. We do have a website, which is www.awonderdog.com. We also have Facebook pages for you to follow if you'd like to. So I started out doing basic obedience, and you know, as people came to me with the service dog needs, you know, it started out one person at a time, and it has grown over the last 6 years. I've put out 12 fully trained service dogs. I've done from a chief judge, we won't give any information on him, to, you know, quadriparaplegics, to sight assist, to diabetic alerts, whatever I can accomplish. You know, I do have to tell people there are things that I cannot do. I can't do a full seeing eye dog, but I can do a sight assist. I've worked with hearing for hearing. That's easy, you know, having the dog alert somebody to a noise. With the soldiers, you find everyone. I don't just train a bunch of dogs and have them sitting around. The people come to me and say, okay, I need a dog for this reason. Okay, so we find the correct dog that's going to fit. And I prefer German Shepherds. That is my breed of choice, but it's not everyone's breed of choice. All right, so I have had people bring me their own dogs, which I will work with. I've had a fellow bring me a Doberman, and there were reasons why. I've had a young man that had seizures, and he's autistic, and they had a corgi, and they wanted a dog from me, but once I got to talking to the mother, the corgi was already doing everything that this child needed. So I said, let me work with this dog. And this dog was ready to go in 4 months, you know, perfect, alerting. The little boy's autistic, and he has what they call running seizures, where he'll just kind of black out and take off running. And Daisy, his dog, will go and get him and stop him. You know, it actually happened at the park when we were there, and we saw it. I do allow them to tether on the condition that the adult is there. They are never allowed to tether to a child because a dog is not a babysitter. And bad things can happen when you leave a child and a dog tethered unattended. So they have to sign in their contract that the adult has a hold of the dog while the dog is tethered to the child. And I've had a couple of those that have had to happen, but that's the only way that the child could be helped. What else? with the soldiers. Okay, so back to where I was. So they come to me and they say, okay, these are my needs. And then I train the dog specifically for their needs. I've done dogs for people with MS. Every MS case is different. MS affects each person different. So some you have to train the dog to walk step, step, step. Some need to be propelled. So you have to have the dog actually help propel the person when they walk. So I don't, you know, like I said, I don't have a bunch of dogs sitting around trained. I train them as the person comes to me and gives me their specific needs. Did I answer that question?
Fully, fully, fully. You get all the credit for that one. No extra credit because we don't give extra credit here. But, you get full credit. Now, you put a lot of stuff in there, and I'm going to come back to it, some of that guaranteed. But what I want you to do for me, since you started to anyway, there was a time when you noted a need not only for the business end, but for a nonprofit end. Can you speak about that, give the name for your nonprofit organization, and talk about how it became into existence?
Okay. The last couple years I've been doing dogs for people for basically, you know, bottom dollar, because I understand what it's like to be disabled and living, you know, with nothing. So, you know, with the heart and the understanding that I have, I've almost worked myself into, well, I did work myself into a really big hole. And if I don't have a home or training, you know, when I had the fire, I rebuilt the house with a training center instead of a garage. So we added, it's, you know, a good 400 square foot training area. And so I can't continue to train dogs if I don't have a home and a place to do it. And I can't afford to keep doing it at the cost I was doing it in the for-profit. So last year we started a nonprofit. so that I could actually be able to pay the bills while I'm training these dogs for the people that need them that cannot pay for a dog. The nonprofit is Wonderment Service Dog Placement Program. We have a website, which is www.wondermentservicedog. And we also have a Facebook page.
So you're able to work with people who can readily write a check, and you're able to work with people who might need a little help.
Yes. And you know, in the last year since we started the 501, I already have a 3-year waiting list, because you can only do so many dogs a year if you're doing them to the proper quality that they should be done. You know, it's not just a basic training and pump them out. This is true service dog training for the exact needs of each person. So, you know, the for-profit helps me pay the bills. The nonprofit basically covers the dog's care while the dog is here, the food, the vetting. I have to pay someone to come in and clean up. We have to board the dog, and our programs are 16 weeks to 32 weeks, depending on the needs. Every dog has to do a yearly intake in order to be accredited every year, because I have found that some people will, and it has happened, they take the dog, they put it in the house with 4 other dogs, and they don't use it as a service dog, and it does not do the things that it was trained to do like they were trained to do. So in those cases, I cannot say you can take this dog out in public because it no longer will meet the ADA standards that a service dog has to meet.
Okay, you just said something that makes me want to ask this question right away. If I was going to get a dog from you, whether it's through your nonprofit side or your profit side, what are the requirements of me? In other words, it does sound like you will place a dog in a home that has other dogs. And some organizations won't place a service dog in a home with other dogs. So can you give
Correct.
Me some of your do's and don'ts as far as who you would place with or not?
Yes. I prefer that there are no other dogs, but some situations they already have a dog. And, you know, it's hard to ask somebody, you need to give this dog up in order to bring a service dog in. But the thing is, they must understand that this is a service dog and this is not a pet. All right? So there are guidelines that I give them. And this is why once somebody becomes a part of my program, they stay a part of my program through the life of the dog. I will always speak with them, and I will always talk with them, and I will always help them, and we will always do upkeep training if it's needed. Because, you know, a disabled person can't correct the dogs the way they need to be corrected. And sometimes they'll let the dogs fall out of the training. You know, hey, you can pet my dog. Here, you can pet my dog. No, that's not allowed. When your dog is out, your dog is your service dog. When that jacket goes on that dog, that is a service dog, and that dog is at work. So during my training, I work very hard at teaching the dogs, jacket on, I'm at work, jacket off, I can be a family dog. So this is something that I really work with on the dogs so that they have that ability to be, you know, a family pet also when they go home. They're still at work. They're always at work. They never stop working. But when that jacket goes on, it's a whole nother ball game. And I've seen it. I know it. And I know it can be done. You know, but yes, I ask that there are no other dogs. And I prefer that. I'll give you a little example. If you're out on a desert island and you have a horse out there and you feed that horse is with you, that horse bonds with you, that horse hangs out with you. But if another herd of horses comes along, that horse is going to run off and become a horse. And you're going to lose that bond that you had with that horse. So I really try to stress this with the families.
Okay. I just thought I'd give you an opportunity to pinpoint that one because, like I said, there are some of us who are program providers that absolutely not, no other dogs in the house. There are others that say, okay, there can be other dogs in the house, but they have to be trained by us. There's others that say, you know what, I don't care. And, you know, so different providers, different things. And
yes, and this is why I make them do a yearly intake, especially if they have other dogs in the family. Now, I don't care where in the United States they are. That is a must.
You're saying yearly intake, but I think what I'm hearing is
a retest.
An annual recertification.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Right. And
so we redo a public
access.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I said, how do you go about doing yours?
We retest the public access test.
Now, do you have the people come back in to you, or do you do it at their location, or how do you do it? Do you Skype it? How do you do it?
No. It has to be done person to person with me, with the dog, whether they fly me out there or whether they come here. You know, I have other dogs in my place, all right? So the other dogs grow up with being able to be around other dogs. That's very important for a service dog, especially a German Shepherd. They have to know that they can be around another dog and be okay and still do their job. My dog is laying right here next to me, and I have another one on the floor, but my service dog does not leave my side. She knows that's her place and that's her job. So the test must be done with me.
Okay.
And I video record everything.
Right, which is great for the person because then they have validation if they're ever legally challenged for taking a service dog or their dog doesn't. Well, here's proof my dog did meet these standards on this day. Okay, when you happen to see my dog, it was a bad day. But let me show you, my dog did meet these standards.
That's right.
And so that way they're covered. Now, let me ask you this, and I'm maybe getting out of order, but it's not my fault, it's yours because you're talking. But you're bringing stuff out of me. Cross training. What's your feeling about a service dog being cross trained for other things? Maybe they do rallies, maybe they do confirmation, maybe they do scent training, maybe they do rescue. What's your feeling on that?
With a handler that's a disabled person, that service dog needs to work for them. Somebody like me that's a trainer, all right, my new service dog, my first service dog, she's 10 years old. She's retired. I have her grandson who is going to be 2 in December, and I have trained him full mobility, and I decided to show him confirmation. Now, they were, when I went, they understood he was my service dog. They allowed, he has to walk on my right side. They allowed him to walk on my right side. And I'll tell you the story. The judge said, why don't you let a professional handle him here? He called a handler in. And I'm like, no, this is my service dog. You don't want anyone else. The minute the other guy took his leash, Jabbers is my new boy. Jabbers went ballistic, jumping up, freaking out because I wasn't next to him. So that is not something I recommend for anyone else to ever do. Their service dog is to do the job that it was specifically trained for the handler. But, you know, you didn't mention scent work. When it comes to an autistic child, the dog must be able to do scent work because autistic children get lost, and that dog needs to be able to find that child. That is the only other, you know, way that the dog has a second job, but it's still the same job because it's for that child. But when you place a dog with a child, the adult is actually the legal handler. Not the child, but the dog needs to be able to find that child. And I've had it happen. One little boy came up missing, and they couldn't find him, and she said, Mia, go find him. And I'm omitting the little boy's name. She told him, Mia, go find him. And he was a mile away at a neighbor's house, and she ran straight to it. So it's extremely important as a trainer that these dogs are trained to be able to do these dual jobs, but not for the disabled person to try to enter the dog in something else.
I think you just blew my mind on that one, because I am left wondering, okay, huh, what? So
did I not explain it?
I don't know.
Did I confuse you?
I don't know if other people are right with you and it's just me, or
explain what I didn't, what I kind of confused you on.
All right, give me a short yes or no answer, okay? A service dog being cross-trained for, let's say, search and rescue. Yes or no?
No.
Okay. A service dog being cross-trained, and this is the last one you said, so I'll find out how you're going with it, and scent training, which is actually part of search and rescue sometimes. Yes or no?
Only for the person that it belongs to. It's
okay,
only
gotcha.
Trained to find that person.
Okay, I'm good with that. As you know, my dogs are autism dogs, and I do that very thing. That's one of my tasks. So you know that, and, you know, my listeners pretty much know that. So that's no secret. So I'm not going to act like I don't know what you're talking about there. But you were saying, yes, they should be trained in these different things as different tasks for the benefit of their subject, their, which is usually their handler. But no, they should not be trained and taken to work with somebody else.
Correct.
Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, sir.
So if that disabled person who has the service dog can, in fact, be the handler, then great. The dog could be cross-trained in many different things, so long as it's the dog's, within the dog's temperament and expertise to be trained.
It depends
on
the handler, too. You know, you couldn't have an autistic child do this. But, you know, like a veteran that works with their dog, you know, there are different situations in every team. So that's kind of a broad question. You know, someone with PTSD, it might benefit them to actually go out and do search and rescue. So if that's something that helps that person, then I would say that would be a task for that person. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
Okay.
I'm back in the boat now. You had me over there just flailing away for a minute, but I'm back now. I'm back now. I think everything's okay. I think we're on our end. Now let's switch gears just a little bit and go back to a term that I like to coin, purposeful breeding. You are a dog breeder, am I right?
I breed a specific bloodline for a specific reason. Yes, sir.
So you're a dog breeder, right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You breed dogs. And you just happen to be a good, responsible dog breeder because, as you say, you're breeding a specific bloodline for a specific reason. And that goes into my question for purposeful bred dogs. Now, in your breeding practices, marrying that up with your service dog practice, are you breeding for service dogs? Are you breeding for something else and using certain dogs for service dogs?
No, I breed for service dogs, but not every dog makes the cut.
I understand. And so you basically, and I'm maybe putting words in your mouth, if I am, just nod your head and say, mm-hmm. Nah, you call me on and get me right if I'm not talking right. You basically have a purpose-driven breeding program, and you're breeding for certain traits, certain temperaments, certain health abilities, and certain size, and all these different things.
Yes.
And that's how you pick your bloodline. That's how you pick who you're going to mate to whom. And then you get the need from the people. As you say, you have a 3-year waiting list. And you know what needs you have. And you know how to pick your dogs to meet those needs and to train the dogs into those needs. And so that's kind of how your program goes?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm so smart. Boy, they should give me a job doing this.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's see here.
You're hired.
Oh, well, boy, I could double my pay now. Let's see. You mentioned how a service dog changes the family dynamic.
Yes.
Now, of course, we know that, you know, I deal with service dogs for very small children, and that service dog changes the family dynamic. That's one of the banners on my calling card. But I'd like for you to talk on that for a minute. Tell me what you mean by that. Tell me. Give me some example. Give me some proof.
Examples. That would be perfect. All right. I place this dog with this family. The father is a preacher. And the little boy is on the autism spectrum. He has oversensory load. He also has seizures. Now, there's a video on our Facebook page of the father explaining exactly what he goes through and how it's changed his family. All right. So his dog Kasha started coming in and would wake him up at night, early in the morning, and they're like, "Why is this dog waking us up?" Well, that early afternoon. The little boy would have an episode, all right, Well, you know, when I place the dogs, I explain to the parents on what to watch for, because they have to learn how to read the dog, because the dogs, you know, they don't, hey, you your child's going to have a seizure in about 4 hours, but, you know, they try to tell us in their own language. So I try to teach the families how to read their dogs. So she started waking him up, and they would realize that early day he would have an episode. So when Kasha comes in and wakes them up, they know that they're going to have a problem that day, and it always happens. One time they were out, we have an old castle that tourists can go out to, and the father had Kasha on a leash, and she started pulling and whining and just circling, and he looked down at her, and he said, I'm omitting the children's name. He said, is he okay? And she was just rearing up on her back feet, so he let her go, and she ran down into the bottom of this castle, and he was in a corner because he was having an episode. He was in a corner, crouched down with his arms over his head, you know, trying to block everything out. And she ran straight to him. But that was her way of telling him that, you know, he's having a problem. And this has made such a difference in their lives as parents, because they're not so worried, you know, is today going to be the day? Is it going to happen today? They already know when they get up in the morning, okay, today's going to be a rough day because Kasha's already told us. Okay, now that's one incident with an autistic boy. I'll give you one with a soldier. All right. He has to be reminded 3 times a day to take his medicine. So, you know, I started very young with this dog. At 6 weeks old, I started 3 times a day, having her come, you know, touch me on the leg, give her a treat. So she started 3 times a day. She'll go over there and touch him on the leg. Hey, where's my treat? Oh, take your medicine. So he knows, you know, he realizes that, oh, wait, I forgot my medicine. Well, he has a sensory problem with noises. He was in a situation where there was an explosion and he lost many of his friends over in Afghanistan. And so a loud noise such as a cabinet door shutting in the kitchen, just the cabinet door shutting, will set him off and he will hit the floor. Well, being that the dog is there, it helps his kids, and who are teenagers, young, you know, teenagers in 12 and up. But it helps them realize, because they see the dog, so it brings to mind, oh, wait, I need to shut this quiet. And so that dog has changed everything in his family dynamics. He's actually able to go out of his house, which he hadn't been for a couple of years since he came home. He told me in 3 months he had done more than he had done in 2 years because of the dog. Because when he'd have a noise, she would come over to him, put her head in the lap, which some people call deep pressure therapy. But this was her way of pulling him out of the noise, so he focused on her and not on the sounds around him. So that changed everything in his family dynamics. Mobility. The quadriparaplegic that I worked for, she has a problem. She'd fall out of her wheelchair, and she'd be on the floor until her husband would come home. Now, Shay Shay will go over and stand and help her climb back up into her wheelchair. and she can get back up in her wheelchair and go about her day without laying on the floor for hours waiting on someone to come home. So her whole world has changed. So these are the family dynamics. You know, I mean, it not only helps the handler, but it gives a peace of mind to the parent, to the husband, to the wife.
Okay, so we're going to do it like that. We're just going to stop talking and not going to give Doc the opportunity to know that you ended your sentence. Okay? Okay.
I'm sorry. I'll let you know. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's all right. I can do this. I'm a trained professional.
That's
I can
right.
Tell if something doesn't happen in a couple, 3 seconds, it's my time to talk. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Did I answer that correct for what you asked?
You're only getting partial credit on that one because you went too far. You just went way too far. I asked you about family dynamic, and you started telling me about the value of a service dog. Now, which is a good answer to a different question, but it's okay. It's okay.
But didn't that add the family dynamics because it you know, the parents aren't concerned because they already know. You know,
oh, that was the good part about the family dynamics. I was talking about something else. That's okay. We're moving on from that one. We're moving
okay.
on.
Okay.
You got your little credit. You can't get no more credit for that one.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about early imprinting because,
yes,
you know, there's a lot of new buzz about early imprinting. And there's some controversy that they try to tie to it. But I want to let you talk about this here. Why are you starting at 6 weeks old? Come on, it's a little puppy. Give the dog a chance to be a puppy.
You want me to tell you what I do at that age?
I want to know. Talk to me.
All right. Okay. My puppies get started on goat's milk. As a matter of fact, they had goat's milk tonight. Right now, they're going to be 4 weeks old at the end of the week. So when I start, we start with a skateboard and goat's milk, all right, because your service dog is going to be in a lot of different situations where it's in moving vehicles. It's always going to be going with you in a car. It's going to be getting on an elevator, possibly a school bus, possibly an airplane. So I start them with a skateboard and goat's milk. And so they have to step up on the skateboard in order to get their goat's milk, and they'll kind of push the skateboard. At first I hold the skateboard still. So they get up on the skateboard, drink their milk. And then we progress to where they're pushing the skateboard. But the skateboard is a little unbalanced, so they learn to be very secure in where they're standing. Okay, I start focus work extremely early. I always ask the people for the names so that I can start teaching the dog the name, because it's very important for the dog to look at the handler and the focus to watch the handler. So this is, you know, what I do at such a young age is basically, it's kind of more play, but it's still teaching them things. We work around a lot of noise. I have somebody vacuum. We have people walk through the room. Just different things so that we're desensitizing the puppy from a young age. I allow them to go outside into storms when it's raining so that they're never afraid. I've never had a dog afraid of a thunderstorm or of rain, because at about 12 weeks old, well, even younger than that, 8 weeks old, they get to spend a couple nights outside in a doghouse in the rain. So, hey, rain's not a bad thing. You know, they're protected. They have their mother. but they need to understand that these things are not bad things. And this is very important to start from such a young age that they know these things are a way of life. By the time my puppies, the ones that are going into service dog, are 16 weeks, they already have a jacket on and they're going out in public. They already know sit, they know how to walk on a leash, and they know how to wear their jacket.
Okay, now I'm looking at my clock and I got tons of stuff I want to talk to you about, but certain things I just absolutely must because you're here. You mentioned bonding a few times, and you are the type of trainer organization. You keep the dog until it's fully trained, and then you place it with the people. And you said that takes a good year to 2 years. I think that's what you said. Could have been what somebody else said.
No, that was somebody else that said that. I listened to that show.
Oh, well then, what is it that
up
you
to 8 months, up to 8 months, but they have to, they're not a full-fledged service dog until they're about 2 years old, but they're ready to go to work by 8 months old.
Okay, so they're with you up to about 8 months.
Yes.
Okay, now here's my question. What do you do, and how do you handle the transferring of the bonding from you, their primary trainer, to the person, their primary handler?
Okay. When they go to their new person, all right, I have a little boy in Pennsylvania that I'm doing a dog for out of this litter. His mother is sending me, the little boy's sleeping on beach towels, and he's not washing them. So she's sending me some towels, some of his clothes, and his puppy will be sleeping in these clothes and these scents. If I need more, I'll have her send me more. You know, if they get soiled, I'll have her send me more. But I don't ever wash them so that the dog has the scent. That's also part of how we do to start teaching the tracking for that scent also. Okay. So when this little boy comes, they're going to come here, and they'll spend a week with me. The first thing they do is the food bowl goes out the window. There is no food bowl. Every morsel of food for the first week is fed from the hand of the child or the handler. Or the adult, if it's a soldier, a veteran. So that dog learns that you are my provider. You are the one that provides me with substance. They also will sleep with that person every night. Now later on, they can go into a kennel. And they are crate trained. Every one of my dogs is crate trained. With as many dogs as I have to know who's fed what. I'm sorry, that's off subject. But in the beginning, the dog must sleep with them. That's a big bonding thing. A little bit to touch on grooming. Grooming is a big bonding thing. So I give them a brush. They have to sit and brush their dog every day. Even if it's for 5 minutes, they sit and brush their dog. But the main thing is the food. Food bowl is eliminated, and all food is done from the hand. And you would be amazed at how quick that bonds them. And that's also a rule. No one else is allowed to ever feed a service dog but the handler.
Okay, good little rule. Miss Bossy with your little rules.
You have to be, though. You know?
Okay.
You do.
Somebody's got to be. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, I am looking at my clock, and I want to be respectful of your time. And since we have short on time, I want to go ahead and give you some latitude and give you an opportunity to fill in some of the many blanks that I might have left that I might not have asked you about or given you a chance to talk about. And I'd like to give you about 4.5 minutes to just speak on what you want to speak about as it relates to service dogs.
I really have. I've really given, you know, I'm okay with if you have a question, go ahead and ask me, because that helps lead me into what I should say.
She wants to be led. Hmm.
I do. I've given so much already of more than what you've asked. So ask me, please.
Okay. As far as service area, you have implied it, but I want to give you a chance to say straight out. Your service area is how big, how small?
My training area?
The people for whom you will serve. The people for whom you will train a dog, they can live where?
I like working local. I mean, close to me where I can drive to them or they can drive to me. But like I said, I'm in Missouri, and I've done dogs for people in Michigan. I've done one for a man in Virginia. I'm doing the autistic little boy in Pennsylvania. But those also, with being out of state, that also brings in the fact that I have to go out there to work with them in their situation. Because coming to me does not teach the dog how it's supposed to act in their world. My world is different, so I want that dog to understand their world. So I'm more than happy to work with people anywhere, but they have to understand, they have to take me, they have to fly me out there, and I have to stay there for the period of time needed.
Okay. And what is your position and how do you handle your working with a handler that really wants to own or train, but they need the help of a trainer as they try to own or train?
Oh, that's I love that. I absolutely love that, because the bond that they build with the dog is even greater. I mean, and this is one reason I really love a German Shepherd. The bond that you develop with a Shepherd, bond you develop with any dog, and I shouldn't be biased to German Shepherds, but the bond you develop with the dog that you work with is so great. So when I have someone that wants to work with their dog, I've not worked with anyone out of state as an owner-handler. I've only worked with people local as owner-handlers, okay? And local, I mean within the state's range. I'm 3 hours from St. Louis and 3 hours from Kansas City, and I've worked owner-handler in both those areas. I do reserve the right to refuse a dog at any point in the program if they mess it up. But they have, you know, I work with them on a weekly basis. We do a weekly, and I say intake, we do a weekly class where I find out what they're doing. I give them new instructions, and we add to what we're doing. I'll give you an example. I had a fella bring me a golden retriever, and he had been giving other people treats in the stores for this dog, and I told him, I cannot undo this. I said, what it's going to take for me to undo this, I will train you another dog for free. instead of trying to fix what you have screwed up. So if they screw this dog up, in my contract, I reserve the right to pull that dog from the program. So they know that, you know, when they're, and you understand when they're serious and they really need this service dog, they're really going to put their hearts into it. So I really do like owner handler classes and working with that, with those kind of teams. I don't do multiple teams at one time. I work with one team. Tomorrow I may work with another team, but I don't feel that every team, every person's disability is different. Their needs are different, so they need to be focused on for just them.
There.
Okay.
Well, it's all good with me. I'm just, you know, here to direct traffic during the show. That's all I do. So you stop
green
talking,
light.
I throw in another question.
Right. I did say okay that time.
Yes, you did. You certainly did. And now comes the point in time where normally I would ask if there's anybody who has a question or a comment that they can call in. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. And if you do have a question or comment, you can call in at 646-668-2499. And you can ask your question or give your comment. Now, if you do call in with a question or a comment, then what you need to do once you get in to the network, then press number 1 on your phone's keypad, and that will let me know that you indeed want to speak. And then we'll get you right on. Now, I am going to give you about 30 seconds to make that phone call so that I know that you're there. If not, then we'll move on and we'll move to close out the show. Now, in the meantime, Miss Alice, why don't you give some closing remarks? And we'll start landing this thing.
In closing, service dogs change your life. They are not something to be taken lightly. I'm a very big advocate on these people that you know, don't need a service dog but just want to take their dog somewhere with them. And I have a big problem with that. You know, with the HEPA law, I'm not really supposed to ask for a prescription, but I ask if they can get a prescription from their doctor. You know, because I want to know that these people are serious and really need a service dog. I do this work for a real serious reason, because I know how a service dog will change your life. And I don't want misrepresentation out there. Oh, well, my dog's trained. I can take it into the Marriott. No, that's not what service dogs are for. Service dogs change disabled people's lives. They make a difference. They can make a person, they can give the person the ability to live on their own. They can go dial a phone. They can go retrieve their medicine from the refrigerator. They can pick something up when you drop it. They can walk you to the bathroom if you can't get there by yourself. And they are life-changing. So my heart is really involved in this, and this means the world to me to be able to do this. That's my closing.
That's your closing. What a wonderful closing. If we were in the courtroom right now and you gave that as a summation, your client would have things go their way. If it was the state, the individual would be found guilty, probably get the chair. If you were defense counsel, your client would get off. And right now, I think there are some people who may be listening or may listen to this later as a podcast, and they might say, wow, that lady sounds pretty much like I want to work with her. I think I want to see if I can get a service dog from her. Or they might say, you know what, I love shepherds, she loves shepherds. Maybe I should work with her for a service dog. So if those people are out there listening, and I think maybe they might be, can you give me your contact information again so that they can get in touch with you, so that they can find you and maybe start a dialogue with you to see if they can get on your 3-year waiting list?
Yes. Now, that's the nonprofit. The for-profit, we will pull the dog out and start working now, because the for-profit, I have trainers that work under me. All right? But the nonprofit, I have to do myself. So the for-profit, the dogs don't go on a waiting list. So just let me express that. Our website, once again, is www.awonderdog.com. That website has pretty much everything that we do. The nonprofit is www.wondermentservicedog.com.
Okay, and is that the best way to get a hold of you, is through?
Yes, both those websites give our phone number and our contact information.
Well, that just says it just the way it needs to be said, and that is a good thing.
And our Facebook pages also.
Facebook page?
Yes.
Somebody say something about a Facebook page. Say the
we
Facebook,
have Facebook
page again.
Pages. Same thing. The Facebook page for the for-profit is A Wonder Dog Service Therapy and Obedience Training. A Wonder Dog Service Therapy and Obedience Training. The nonprofit is Wonderment Service Dog.
Wonderment Service Dog.
Yeah.
And that's it? That's
yes.
Getting out there? Okay. All righty. Well, that's great. So now people know how to get in touch with you, and they can get more information if they should choose to, which I think is a very good thing and a very good idea.
And I'm always there to answer a question. Anyone has a question or need, or somebody's trying to self-train, I am more than happy to always give my advice. My advice may not be the perfect advice, but it's what I know. And I'm always willing to share. Okay?
Always willing to share.
Always.
Well, that in itself is a mouthful. So, having said that, and having given you all kinds of opportunities to speak your mind freely without limitations, and you haven't done that, I'll give you just one more opportunity. Did you forget something and it just came back to you and you said, oh, yeah, or anything you might want to say right now? That's it.
To speak my mind. No, I think I've pretty much touched on everything. Don't be a faker. service dogs change your life. There's a reason for every service dog. That's it, you know. Service dogs change your life. That's my mind.
Well, that's the moniker right there. That's the thing you want to put on your business card. That's the thing you want to put on your literature.
It is. My card says changing lives one dog at a time.
Well, there you go. And, you know, I fully agree. And anybody who's listening to this show who actually has a properly trained service dog knows that you're saying what you're saying is true. And, you know, I tease and I joke, but that is one of my bullet points in my presentation, is having one of my dogs in your home in service is not only going to change the life of the child, but it's going to change the life of everyone in the household.
That's
because
right.
It changed the environment within the household. It might even save a family, because we know that families who have children with disabilities are several times more apt to breaking up than families who aren't. And so that is that. And I want to thank you for being on again. Second, I want to thank my listeners for listening. Third, I want to tell everybody that Miss Rachel Pastilia, and she can clean that up tomorrow, she'll be on tomorrow and she'll be talking about her experiences with service dogs, life with a service dog, and the positive impact that the service dog has had on her quality of life. So she will She's gonna
testimony.
Let you know that what I yeah, she's gonna give testimony to what I said is correct. And what you said is correct. And that is super, because some people listen to these shows just to really justify the cost of spending the money for the training, or the money for the dog, or the money for the equipment and all that. And with hearing all the testimonials from different guests I have on the show, it helps them to be confident that they're doing the right thing. So
absolutely.
Go ahead.
I thank you so much for inviting me, and I'm so glad I did. I came and spoke with you.
Well,
and the listeners. I'm so glad.
Well, we're glad that you're glad, and we're glad that finally you said, okay, I can do it. You know, I might be a little shaken, but if it can help somebody, I'll do it.
That's
and
right.
Guaranteed it has helped. It will help. And you could send people to the podcast in about 10, 15 minutes, and they'll be able to hear it. And it will help for a long time after the show airs, because it'll
be
there.
If it helps one person, I've made a difference.
There you go. And that's what we want to do. We want to make a positive effect on somebody's life. Why? Because we can. And so thanks, Alice, for being on the show. Thank you, all my listeners. Thank you for caring. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for supporting the show. And we'll see you again on tomorrow, where we'll do it all over again. God bless you. Love each other. And love your dog. Good night.
Good night.